This is Life Elsewhere, created and hosted by Norman B.
Hello there, pop pickers. Welcome to Life Elsewhere. And for the next 60 minutes, we're going to continue with our conversation series. This time, a gentleman I'm so delighted to talk to out of Manchester, Mr. Harry Stafford. One time, he was fronting the band called the Inca Babies. And I have right here on the control board a 7-inch from way back when in the early 80s. See if we can squeeze that one on. Harry has a new album called Gothic Urban Blues. And before we get to chat with Harry, here's the title cut. This is Life Elsewhere.
Tokens in my hand and get Lady Sarah to tell my fortune. Put me in the penthouse of the shifting sands and drop 10 grand on a cold up lip. Take me to the top of the Gothic Highs. Take me to the breathless Aletheia Tower. Just got loose, I can feel the whole joke changing as we speak. But did you lie to the fortune teller? Made it up to sugarcoat all of your woes. Crack arsenic exhaust fumes in my lungs. Hide the smell of the back city dream. Put me in the barrel that goes over the falls. I'm bad, I don't come out on the other side.
Gothic Urban Blues is the title. That happens to be the title of the album from the gentleman, Mr. Harry Stafford, talking to us from the UK. Harry, welcome to Life Elsewhere.
Hello. Good to hear you, Norman.
I'm very excited to talk to you, Harry, because you were in a band that once upon a time I played on my radio show many times, and I used to get people calling up and saying to me, what does that mean? What does Inca Babies mean? So if you don't mind, we're going to go back in time just a little bit and talk about the Inca Babies. What a great name. I just want to just touch on that for a minute. Inca Babies, terrific name. Where did that come from?
Well, it's funny because I had friends of mine who were in a band called the Egyptian Kings, and I said, why didn't you call it the Pharaohs? And anyway, I was reading National Geographic, and I wanted to be called the Inca Kings. But I saw in National Geographic, they used to take these small children and put them on the mountains as sacrifices. And I thought that was so sort of awful.
Oh.
I wanted to kind of bring it back and say, right, we're going to be called the Inca Babies, who came back from the mountain and survived, because we didn't like the idea of them being sacrificed. So we became the Inca Babies.
I love that. I never knew that. That is a great, great reason to call yourselves the Inca Babies. I love that. If you don't mind, maybe in a little while, we'll play a cut from the Inca Babies in the program, because I'd love my listeners are not familiar to go back in time and listen to that. But that's come right up to date, Harry, because you have a new album. We just played the title cut, Gothic Urban Blues. I love the title. I've got to tell you that. I think the title is just such a good one. Tell me about making this album. Tell me about how did it come about.
Well, it's the second album that I've done as a solo act. The first one was called Guitar-Shaped Hammers. And this one is more of a kind of, how should we say, a album. And the first one was a lot of experiments and a lot of tracks put together. This time I've actually made an album in an old school way, whereby I've actually ordered the tracks, underlying concept going through it about the city, about the metropolis, and each song leads on to the next one. It's not very obvious. It's very obvious to me. But so this is actually a proper old school, like a vinyl album with one side and a flip side and 10 tracks, 5 tracks on each side. And it very much, it's what albums used to be when I used to buy them in the 70s and 80s.
Yes.
So that's my idea.
Okay, well, I've got to tell you, I like it a great deal. I love the cover because it's very evocative of what you're talking about going back in times. And there's something about this album that makes me say it could have come from 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And that is a compliment. I love the way that you've put this together and that you've done it. Having said that, a lot of people like to sort of go, okay, he sounds like, or they sound like. And I have this almost aversion to train spotting, to say, I always like to think that people are their own sound, their own person. I'd just like to get your take on that, Harry, because I'm positive that you have people saying he sounds like, or it's a reminiscent of. Just get me your take on that.
Well, I wouldn't deny that there are certain bands and certain artists that I just adore. And you can't help sometimes take the spirit of that kind of music. And certainly Tom Waits, Nick Cave, various amazing bands from the 80s and I suppose in the 90s, and some of those rock bands. Queens of the Stone Age, elements of that. But what I've done is I try to sort of bring in a bit and make it a sort of a bluesy kind of storytelling, barroom, piano, jazzy kind of thing, but with the spirit of those other artists.
Yes.
And it's very important to me that I will borrow, but at the same time, overall, I hope I've created something that is reasonably unique. You never can be totally original these days because there's a lot of water under the bridge. And
right.
So you may well write a tune and think, that's brilliant, and think, oh, it sounds a bit like that. It's kind of inevitable because there's been so many brilliant songs in the world written, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. Well put. I like that. Gothic Urban Blues is the title of the album. We're talking to Harry Stafford. Now I want to turn our attention to hometown for you. Now, you're from just outside of a city that I know only too well, Manchester. For my American listeners, and this show goes out all over the place, but for my American listeners not too familiar with the geography of the UK, I don't want you to give us a geography lesson, Harry, but Manchester is a very important town or city in the UK. Just from your perspective, just give us a little overview of Manchester.
Well, Manchester, it regards itself as the second city after London.
Yeah.
Even though Birmingham might have something to say about that in terms of size. But in Manchester, if you basically travel up north from London, you'll come to Liverpool and Manchester, which is in the north west of the UK. And Manchester is a big city, and it has an incredible music scene. From bands that started in the 60s and 70s, like 10cc, through to punk and the Buzzcocks and Joy Division, through to the Smiths and then the Stone Roses and Happy Mondays and Oasis.
Yes.
So it's got this incredible kind of musical history. And I came to Manchester around about the time when the Buzzcocks and Joy Division were very much a part of the important Manchester scene. And that's really what drew me to a lot of the Manchester music scene. And Joy Division, of course, were an incredible influence. And I still, when I pick up a bass guitar, I still can't help myself playing the odd Peter Hook bass line.
Yes, it's so evocative. Right,
and
of
it's
course.
One of those extraordinary kind of records that has stuck with me forever.
Yeah, you know, I've got to ask you this, because it always intrigues me about bass players, particularly when they're influenced by Peter Hook. Do you hang your guitar sort of low? Remember how he used to have his guitar almost down to his knees?
That's right. Well, I think, you know, there's a certain, attitude when you put your guitar down that low.
Yes.
And it kind of, it's like a gunslinger.
Yes.
It's like I'm sure Clint Eastwood wouldn't hold a guitar under his chin. You know, it'd be something, well, low slung and ready for action.
Yes.
That's the way I look upon where you hold your guitar.
Yeah, great, great. I love that. I love the analogy there. Harry Stafford is my guest. His new album is called Gothic Urban Blues. We're going back in time. We're sort of going backwards and forwards here, talking about Manchester, talking about influences and where you were growing up. Getting into music, I'm always curious to know how people just make that decision, sort of throw their all into becoming a performer, becoming a musician. What was it like for Harry Stafford?
Oh, well, it was easy for me. I think 1977, punk rock happened.
Yeah.
And while we were listening to all of the old Led Zeppelin and Genesis and all of the kind of mid-70s prog rock and all that sort of stuff, punk rock suddenly came along with the Damned's first album, the Ramones' first album, the Sex Pistols and the Clash's first album. And I don't know, it was like just something just fired off in me. And listening to the Ramones' first album, I had to pick up a guitar. And soon worked out that amazing songs could be played with just two chords or two bar chords. And that just snowballed. And after that, I had to form a band. It was as simple as that. And I think everyone in the UK was forming punk bands at that time, sort of 77, 78, 79, just because we just wanted it. We had a voice, I mean, which we'd suddenly found, and we wanted a shout.
Yes.
And I think that was very much at that time, when punk rock happened, and it led on to other music after that. But at the time, it was just how could I not be in a band with an electric guitar? It seemed like there was nothing else more sensible at the time to do that.
Yes, if you hadn't become a musician, just would like to know what would Harry Stafford be doing?
You know, I think I would have probably. My dad was a teacher, and my mum was a scientist. So I don't know. Maybe that.
Something.
I was very academic.
Yes.
In terms of science.
Yes.
I liked English literature a lot, so I read a lot. I don't know. Maybe that would have been my calling. But music, electric guitar. Led you astray,
right. Let's talk about being led astray, because the music business is a funny old business, isn't it, really? There's lots of wonderful things that can happen, and there's lots of ups and downs. For you, Harry Stafford, as you look back on it, how do you see it now from a distance? For you, has it been lots of ups and downs?
Gosh, the industry has changed beyond recognition. When we used to put records out in the 80s, you would sell, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 and barely even dent the chart. And you would just hope that you sold enough to sort of be able to get your money back. I mean, you made a few pounds, not a huge amount, because recording costs so much. You needed at least £5,000 to £20,000 to record an album in those days. Nowadays, you can literally go in a studio, it's all digital. You can do it in a few days, and you get just as good a result. And then, of course, the whole point of it was selling units. You have to sell units. And so people would go to huge pains to try and get these records out everywhere and get everyone to play them. But of course, you'd release a record, and very few people would hear it because you didn't have the options of being able to get it to so many people. So you had to send off hundreds of them, and of course, most of them would end up in charity shops. And the industry basically self-imploded about in the 90s when they didn't understand the internet and they didn't understand that that people actually realized that once they had a once music went online that it became free.
Yes.
And so there was no point in actually buying anything unless you were an absolute diehard fan, because you could listen to it free. And of course, now a whole new generation has rightly or wrongly now has come to embrace that. And while they don't listen to any less music, of course they don't buy any of it. So for people like me, it means that there's no money in it unless I can play some shows and charge
right.
Not too much for people to come and see me, and maybe sell a few T-shirts.
Yes.
And but there isn't much money in it.
Yeah.
So I do it because I'm an artist.
Right.
As opposed to be able to make much money from it. But I still put stuff out, and I will. There's going to be a third Harry Stafford album, which will be part of the trilogy, out in a couple of years' time. So there's nothing stopping me this time either.
Well, Harry, I want to talk to you more about the business side of things, and because you have your own label, which you've had for a number of years now, and I'd like to talk about that. But before we get to that, let's take a musical interlude, so to speak, and play a cut from Gothic Urban Blues. What I'm going to do, if you don't mind, is hand the selection over to you. So if you'd like to select the second cut we're going to play on the show, you choose one from your album.
Well, I'm going to say play Black Rain.
Black Rain
is not one of my songs. It's a song by Phil Schoenfeld, who's a very good friend of mine. And I interpreted his version of it into a more kind of, a more gothic urban blues kind of style. And it's turned out really well, I think. And Phil was just talking the other day. He's really chuffed with the way it's come out. And hopefully I'll be going to Prague to play a festival. And he'll be there and he'll be singing the chorus with me.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, let's play it now. This is from Gothic Urban Blues, Harry Stafford, his solo album. This one's called Black Rain. And this is Life Elsewhere.
Black rain falling down on me. Stone clouds keep on building and the sun don't shine. Black rain put a spell on me. These ghosts must be turning for such a long time. And my body is just an ocean that I still cling on to. I can see right through these holes in my skin. I see a shining, perfect vision, raining mercy down on me. But its voodoo keeps on changing the shape that it's in. Black rain falling down on me. Storm clouds keep on building and the sun don't shine. Black rain had a spell on me. These ghosts have been turning for such a long time now. And this binding old river keeps on rolling. Somebody must have been around here who fixed these holes in my skin. And I feel just like weeping Jesus, won't you cut me down? I've been changing the shape of this flesh that I'm in. Holes in my skin. And I feel just like weeping Jesus, won't you cut me down? I've been changing the shape of this flesh that I'm in. Black rain falling down on me. Some clouds keep on building and the sun don't shine. Black rain got a spell on me. These ghosts must be turning.
Black rain from Gothic Urban Blues, the solo album from Harry Stafford. Do like that a great deal. I've got to tell you, I have a sort of a soft spot for music that you're making. There's something about this album which really touches me. There's a lot of emotion going on in this album, and that's something that I really, really appreciate. I want to get into talking about the album in a little bit more detail, but before we get to that, record labels, having your own label, distributing and merchandise and all that kind of side of the business. As you mentioned just a little bit earlier, Harry, that is how bands like yourself, an artist, make money these days. It is touring, it is doing shows, and it is putting out T-shirts and other merchandise. Talk to me about that, about what's involved in that, and how what that means for Harry Stafford.
You can make a small amount, but I mean, if, of course, you were a massive band and you were playing at big, huge halls, then you would print off thousands of T-shirts and hopefully you could sell them off. But on a small level like me, I mean, I made 250 T-shirts at a time, and which cost about, I don't know, cost about 250 quid, so you get them for about £1 each. And if you sell them for £10 or £15, then as you can see, you work it out, you get your money back and you make a profit. And that often goes back into recording and then making an album. I put CDs together and there's a vinyl record because we had a few people who just said, I've got to have vinyl. So, knock out some vinyl. And we sell those again at gigs. And we can sell them, you know, for regular prices, £10 for a CD, £20 for vinyl. But as you can see, it's small. It's a small kind of market, and you're not going to be rich from it. But at the same time, there's a real satisfaction in people coming up and buying your stuff. It's like in the old days, you know, you would go to your distributors, and how many thousand copies have we sold? And they'd go, oh, you're not bad. You sold 4,000 of that single, you know. And there's magic to our, absolutely wonderful to our ears. As now, of course, when you run a record label, you're looking at small margins. You can't expect, as I say, to be rich from it. But it still goes on. You still make merchandise, and you still get as many shows as possible, and you try and sell stuff. Of course, a lot of the time, at the end of an evening, people don't have spare cash on them, so you have to kind of haggle and barter with them. They say, oh, have a CD, and they say, oh, I've only got £5.
Yes.
Sometimes you just bite the bullet and go, it's yours for £5.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's better in their collection than sitting in a box in my cellar.
Yes.
I always say.
Yes. In a way, Harry, what you're describing is that being a musician is, in some respects, a labour of love, isn't it?
Oh, it is, definitely. You do it because well, you have these songs and you have these ideas and you have this vision that you just have to put out there.
Yes.
And, you know, you hope that people like it and you hope that they'll come to the shows. And, you know, we have people coming to our shows, so we must be doing something right. And it's hugely enjoyable and very rewarding.
Yes.
And I just like to be part of that community of songwriters and musicians, certainly in the UK, who are doing this, regardless of the fact that it's not hugely profitable.
Right. Let's talk about musicians, and let's talk about the album and the music, the songs that are on it. I've already said that I love this, and I hate saying this in some respects, this type of music, this genre of music. I try to avoid saying that, but there is something about this that touches me. And one of the things I just said is that there seems to be a lot of emotion in this. And talk to me about songwriting, about where it comes from you, and how you go about it.
I think there's each of these songs has a story behind it.
Yeah.
So, I am telling a story in it, and often it's a story of woe. And so, of course, there's an element of misery, but sometimes there's a happy side to it. There's got to be a bit of misery, though, otherwise there's no end kind of joy to keep people interested. The song goes through, it's about the metropolis. It's about, like, you start off with, She Just Blew Me Away, which is a story about a man who has these very short love affairs whereby he meets people, and there's usually a girl who blows him away, and she ends up blowing him away because it was a very short love affair anyway. And it's just little stories, like little visionettes, sort of thing like that. And it runs through, and often these stories are characters who have a story to tell. And I try and give them a voice and give them a melody and give them some way of communicating, this often a story of woe, but at the same time, hopefully an emotional story about their lives and their beliefs, maybe, and their existence. And I think that is always very interesting when you hear other people telling stories.
Yeah. Do you like writing songs?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
I find myself, I have a notepad on me all times.
Yeah.
I'm often just opening it up and just writing the most bizarre things, which I look back on sort of 24 hours later and go, what on earth did that mean? And just hopefully remember what I was trying to say with that.
Yeah.
Whether it just be a few words or a little story or just, just some strange connection. Absolutely love writing songs.
Now, the process for you, Harry, and when, for instance, pick on She Just Blew Me Away, there's one thing that I noticed about that song. It could have been titled She Blew Me Away, but that just that you put into the title, I think, really sort of makes it, and it kind of twists it around a little bit. She Just Blew Me Away. Yeah. Talk to me just about the actual process for you. For instance, in that song, you've got a notepad, you're writing some things down. What happens? Do you go into the studio? You tell me how it works.
So that song started off with a piano lick. I was just sitting at the piano, and it just, it's almost like a bass line that played at the bottom end of the piano. So, da, 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 da,
yeah.
Da. And with that, you've kind of got a foundation for, I'm going to tell you a story,
yes,
sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, what do I do now? I wanted to tell a story of Jim, this friend of mine, Jim, who's a singer, who thinks he's a bit of a Casanova, but it's a bit of a failure when it comes down to it, but always has a good story. And one of his stories was, she just blew me away, man. And I said, well, what happened in the end? And he said, well, yeah, she just blew me away. So there was that was the beginning, and that was the end of the song. So I filled in the middle with this story of unlikely romance that is kind of him in a way, somewhat embellished, because he wasn't there for an interview so much as he'd given me one line. But that was enough for me to flesh out a story. And with that backbeat, it just seemed like, as I said, that piano bass line, it was just, this is a story, boom, 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 boom. And so it just seemed like that was the best way to do it to me.
Well, we've been talking about it. Why don't we play it? This is She Just Blew Me Away from Harry Stafford. This is Life Elsewhere.
There's a dent in my head of where the drunks took a shy. There's a part of my tail thinks it's gotta be a fly. Up to Mr. Guy with the shakedown suit, face first in the bar without the aid of a chute. Got a plate in his head attracting airborne metal splinters, mixed up in the mess of confused pedal fingers. She got me with her eyes, poisonous, a handheld mine. Exploding tiny clusters say, the world is that. She just blew me away. She just blew me away. She just blew me away. Attracted to the canteen in the gaping open graves. Solo to Mars, I'm back behind the moon. Space between my ears and into orbit too soon. She just blew me away. Mixed up in the mess of confused puddle fingers. She got me with her eyes and as a hand held mine. And exploding tiny clusters say, the world is thine. She just blew me away. She just blew me away. She just blew me away.
She just blew me away, the title of that one. I was singing along to that here in the studio. She just blew me away from Harry Stafford from the album Gothic Urban Blues. Thank you for telling us about writing that one, Harry. Really appreciate it. There is something about this album, as I keep saying, that touches me. And I, in a way, I'm kind of like looking backwards going, I remember all the different music that I listened to back in the day that had influences on me. And this is one of those records, as I already mentioned, that I could sort of see this from days gone by. But it's also it has a very modern sound. And I want to talk to you about that, about the band, because I think you call your band the Guitar-Shaped Hammers. That was an album as well. But
That's right.
Yeah. Talk to me about the band and talk to me about just being in the studio.
Well, the idea of Guitar-Shaped Hammers is it goes back to when I used to play around the bars in Manchester and sort of open mics and things, and it was just me and a piano, and everyone played guitar. You'd go there and there'd be guitars, everyone would come on and play their guitar. And it was also when I came on and played piano, people looked at me and said, why aren't you playing guitar? Are you insane? So I felt like a nail surrounded by guitar-shaped hammers, all banging me into the ground and nervous me. So that's why guitar-shaped hammers come from. It comes from an expression. I'm a nail surrounded by hammers. In this case, I was a nail surrounded by guitar-shaped hammers, all just beating me into submission because I was playing the piano and not a guitar. I mean, I'm actually a guitarist.
Yes,
but I wanted to take piano into the bars because it seemed to me bars, piano,
yeah,
bar rooms, blues, jazz, all that sort of thing. Hoagy Carmichael,
sure,
Moose Allison, people like that.
Yeah,
sorry, Moose Allison, people like that. Yeah, so and that was me. It took a while for them to accept me. All those guitars, strumming away while I plonked away with my
bluesy,
jazzy thing.
I love it.
So,
yeah.
And in the studio, I tried to take that further and with other musicians. And the jazzy elements of it is Kevin, who plays this amazing kind of trumpet like Miles Davis. Who else could it sound like? Ornette Coleman. He has this incredible kind of sense of traditional not traditional, actually, wrong word, real sort of from bebop to sort of the incredible blues from the 60s and 50s and 60s. And he just was perfect. And there's Vincent, who plays this slide guitar, this Weissenborn lap steel guitar, which is incredible. And then I had a drummer and another guitarist, and I played a bit of bass and piano mainly. Basically, we all sort of got together and we just sort of thought, well, who's playing what? Which bit are we playing? But we'd worked it all out, and very much a kind of building layers, but not too much, because there's nothing worse than having an album that has about 1,000 instruments on it.
Yes.
It starts to lose its light and shade. And I always think music is exploiting silence. Start with silence and then just slowly put little bits in, but we still want to hear the silence every now and again.
Yes.
So you don't crowd it out. That's what I think.
Now, Gothic Urban Blues, to me, has a very rich live sound without being live. Does that make sense? It feels like you're all playing together. I don't know how many overdubs you have or whatever, but I get the feeling that you don't have too many, but maybe you can explain.
Well, we did want it to sound fairly loose, and Kevin certainly is not someone who is going to play to a very regulated click track. He's going to move it all around. He's going to like a cyclone, like a wind coming in and out of the sound. So he was going to make it sound fairly loose. And likewise, Nick, the guitarist, who's basically playing noise and feedback and drones and things like that, you know, he's not sticking to any rhythm. So, of course, you've got these things coming in and out, which does make it quite loose. And so you have that live sense of music that's bouncing off the walls a bit.
Yes. Yeah, and it comes across like that. I think that's possibly part of the magic of this album. There is that sort of urgency to it that it doesn't feel like you just put a track down here and a track down there, went away and then came back, and said, let's throw some more in. It sounds, got it. Harry Stafford is my guest. The album is called Gothic Urban Blues. If you don't mind, Harry, I'd like to go back in time just a little bit. We've already sort of ventured back talking about things, and you talked about the name, the Inca Babies. Let's just go back to those early days and making music, writing songs, putting records out, and the era that you were in the 70s and then the early 80s, is there any way that you can just describe to my audience just how it felt for you at the time? Just give us, if you can, a sort of a feeling of those days.
Well, I think it was, we were very kind of dedicated in terms of we rehearsed all the time. We were all at university and we were just finishing our courses, I think, or we were halfway through them, and we had plenty of time in our hands because I don't think we were very serious students, and so we were rehearsing all the time. We all dressed in black. We all had massive sort of big spiky hair, not kind of hair metal kind of style, but more kind of gothic sort of what we called swamp quits. We looked like the Cramps. And as I said, we were black, and we had everything was pared down to this raw kind of electric guitar noise. And we very much were huge fans of the Birthday Party and the Gun Club and the Cramps and the Ramones and bands like that at the time. And we drums, bass, guitar and a vocalist, and we just tried to pare it down so that it was just this extraordinary kind of blues rock, but at the same time very jump start. So it was stopping and starting, lots of shouting, lots of whoops, and at the same time we played all around the UK. Just in that we used to get in a van and just drive around. Obviously the tour was organised, and we would arrive at these places, just unload, pour on the stage, and just blast away for about an hour, and then be on our way again. It wasn't fun, and we were like urchins. We were like street urchins who appeared. We dragged ourselves on and just blasted away on these electric guitars for about an hour, as I say. And that would have been sort of 84 to about 88. So those 4 years that we existed. And we did that for absolutely, well, for those 4 years.
Yes.
It seemed like eternity. I think we played about 300 gigs just constantly. Playing, and it was very exciting, I have to say.
Harry, thank you so much for explaining that. You went exactly where I wanted you to go, because it now leads me to ask you about style, because style in rock and roll in the UK is so important. And another topic I want to go to is the influence that John Peel had. But before we answer or talk about those two topics, let's have a listen to the Inca Babies. This one I've got lined up is called The Interior. I hope you remember making this from 1983 on your own label, Black Lagoon Records. This is Life Elsewhere.
In that soul cry, my box, I could the man who put them there.
So great to hear that one again. I can remember first playing that on the radio all those years ago. Inca Babies from a 7-inch, and I've got my original 7-inch right here. The Interior of that one, actually, it doesn't look that bad after all these years. It's in fairly good condition, Harry. It really is. Love hearing that again.
I'm not sure I've even got a copy of that. I know a friend of mine has got one. I'm just going to go around to his house and look at it just so I can remind myself what it looked like.
Yeah, it's so funny because...
It's a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I've kept... You know, it's so funny. I've got a big warehouse full of stuff that I've kept for over the years, and you kind of treasure it. And it's sort of... It's turned out that keeping these things, I think... Somebody said to me one day, I said, why don't you just get rid of all that stuff? Just, you know, just sell it all, or just, you know, dump it or something. Take it to Goodwill or Salvation Army. And I was like, no, this is my heritage. Yeah, exactly. Inca Babies, The Interior. I'm talking to Harry Stafford. His new album is called Gothic Urban Blues. You touched on the way you looked and the way you guys dressed, the black and the sort of the pompadour kind of gothic haircuts that you described back then in the early 80s. Style and fashion in rock and roll has always been incredibly important in the UK. I think probably more so over there than it is or has been in the United States. Over a period of time, things have changed. These days, here's Harry Stafford dressed in a suit and looking kind of, I think, very suave and a great look. Talk to me about that, Harry.
Well, I am still of the belief that it's absolutely essential to dress up and look something beyond maybe your audience. You need to stand up there and be noticed. I mean, nowadays, of course, people have gone completely the opposite way, whereby it's almost natural to turn up and play in jeans and T-shirts. Jeans, T-shirt, and sneakers, and that's it. You know, every single band seems to do that. But of course, when we were performing, it was very important that we wore black leather and we had these haircuts that were took ages to sort of spike up and look good. And it was very important that we had this scene, which meant that we, I think it was fairly tribal, although tribal in a good way, tribal in a showing off, in a posing way, maybe, as opposed to anything nasty. And there were lots of different tribes in the UK. Nowadays, that's all gone, really. You've got retro tribes, like, I suppose, mods, and you've got or Northern Soul, and yeah. You've got people who are into, obviously, metal. They dress in a certain way. But if you go outside the metal scene and the Northern Soul scene, I mean, you've got hip-hop, I suppose.
Yeah.
But there's not a huge amount of differentiation. People just all look the same.
Yes.
Which I think is a shame, because I absolutely loved the whole point of going on stage was that you dressed up.
Yes.
You made an effort. You know, you put on your best bib and tucker.
Yes.
And,
yes.
As a suit I wear nowadays. And I think basically you kind of look sharp.
Yeah.
And I think that was part of it. I think I must be a dying breed, because not so many people do that these days.
I couldn't agree with you more. I love it. For me, it's so important, and I think that's why I was always, way back when, I was attracted to Elvis Presley, because obviously the guy got up on stage and dressed up in the finery. It was wonderful stuff. And then, I don't
Absolutely.
Know, just everything, things have changed, as you say, but style. And I love the way you're looking right now. I got to tell you, I think it's a terrific look. It really is. Let's now go back. I'm sort of jumping backwards and forwards here. But now let's come back up to date and talk more about what's going on these days. Over the years, you've been involved in the music business and you've seen the changes. You've seen the changes in fashion as well. But music these days, it's either big business. And as you say, for you, it's, you know, you go on the road, you're doing it. It's a labor of love, but you're still making some money. But the business has changed. And I'm curious to know from Harry Stafford, are there things about the business now that you sort of say to yourself, I don't know, what are the downfalls of the business right now for you, Harry?
Well, the downfalls is that people don't buy your records anymore.
Yeah.
The whole idea of putting out an album, this is why it's a bit of a labour of love, because I put out an album in an old style way. Many people won't listen to it in its entirety. They may listen to one or two songs, so they won't actually hear the way I'm trying to present it.
Yeah.
Likewise, they won't necessarily pick up and look at the artwork on the record.
Right.
It's been painstakingly put together. So there's those elements of it. That's all pretty much gone now. I mean, there are still diehards who must have the vinyl, must have a CD collection. I mean, I have... unlike you, I have boxes of vinyl and boxes of CDs because I'm of that age whereby it was very important. Those collections, you know, you spend all your money on those collections.
Right.
So that was the most essential part of the musician's, basically the musician's salary. And all, if you look at all of those big, massive stars of the 70s, 80s and 90s, they made money and became very rich because they sold records.
Yes.
So if you take that out of the conundrum, there's a lot of musicians out there who are, put it this way, they may well have to get another job in order to make ends meet, because unless they can do tours and start to, I don't know, ask for £40 a ticket or they get... they sell their music maybe to a TV station or they get lucky or something like that, and they can get their song played on the radio, so they get PRS or royalties from that respect. You know, but only so many artists that get to that stage where they can make that kind of money. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of others, of course, who make records, but there is no one to buy them, really. So,
right.
Of course, that area of the industry is sadly gone. And so, of course, it means that the internet has snaffled and taken away all our possibilities for selling records. But I still make them. I don't think I can be bitter because life moves on. And of course, we now live in a situation whereby we have to put our music on streaming services, which of course is free.
Yes.
Great shame.
Well, that's great that you said that, because it leads me on to another question, a follow-up question, is what do you think of the music business today in the fact that there are all these streaming platforms? I mean, my show goes out as a streaming show, as a podcast, and it goes out on different radio stations. So for me, it's terrific. For a musician, there's lots of advantages, but I just wonder, what overall is it like for you as a musician, as a working musician, and the music now? Because music is, people are making music in their bedrooms. They've got a computer, they've got a laptop, and they're just sitting there fiddling around and making some great music. What do you think about that?
Oh, no, I mean, this is true. I mean, many, many more people are making music because it does grab people. At the same time, I think probably there's probably too much in a way. I mean, I was told somewhere along the line that something like 20,000 new tunes are put on Spotify every week or every day, I forget what it is. And so there's all of this stuff. I mean, and sadly, not all of it is brilliant. And so you have to sift through an awful lot of stuff to find something that really floats your boat.
Yeah.
And so a lot of stuff gets missed out. And that is a great shame as well. I think quality control is a problem.
Right.
But, you know, we can't deny people the opportunity or the platform in order to put their music out and have their voice heard. So, in a way, I'm contradicting myself.
Yeah, no, I understand. I completely understand what you're saying. I've got a question for you, because you're a songwriter and I think you write terrific songs. Has that been something that you've thought about, or you do is write songs with other people in mind?
There's always, I listen to stuff and I think, gosh, wouldn't that be great if they could do that? Or wouldn't that be great if that sounds of a certain ilk, that song, that would be really good if that person could listen to it, etc. So, yeah, that's always a possibility. I'm not well known enough for people to come to me and say, oh, write me a song or like that, which that'd be lovely if that happened. But I write songs for myself, really, because that's the realistic thing to do. Also, I like the idea of singing my own messages, I suppose.
Ah, yes. You know, always, yeah. Yes.
You know, when they're quite close to you, I think you can hopefully do it justice. But then again, until someone else sings it, you never know.
Yes. I guess there's a follow-up to that, Harry, and that is there anybody that comes to mind that you say, I would love them to cover one of my songs?
Oh, gosh, it's sort of saying that. I don't know, how about someone like, I don't know, I'd like the Queens of the Stone Age to play one of my songs.
Ah, they're okay. A good band. Yeah.
And, you know, they're all good. I'd love Tom Waits to sing one of my songs. But then he's so amazing anyway, and he has such a fabulous back catalogue that he need not look anywhere else. But yeah, you know, I mean, people like that. Oh gosh, yes, maybe anyone who can have a massive audience, just a have my ideas put to them, I think that would be great. You know?
Yeah,
there's nothing better than to actually have someone interpret one of your songs and have a big audience to listen to it and appreciate it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Harry, unfortunately, this is the part where I say this with great sort of, I don't know, it just always bothers me that I have to say the fact is we're coming to a point where I'm going to have to say thank you very much, because there's only so much time that we have, and I would like to chatter to you for a long time. What I'd like to do is for you to select another cut from your album, from Gothic Urban Blues, and we'll use that to take us out. So you just choose one more cut and we'll play that.
Okay, I'm going to go with A Cruel Set of Shades, which is a lovely bluesy groove. and it's about the joys of wearing sunglasses.
Yes. A cruel set of shades. I love it. I love the title as well. Harry Stafford has been my guest. The album is called Gothic Urban Blues. I highly recommend it. As I always say when I'm coming to the end like this, there's so many more questions that I have. But thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Norman. It's been great.
Thank you, Harry. This is Harry Stafford, Cruel Set of Shades from Gothic Urban Blues. And this is Life Elsewhere.
He could see the night of Babylon through crystal crimson lenses, the tiring vista put upon to hell my love with you. With gold frame aviators, he flew the payload to the east. With General Pips and Ephelets, he flushed the fighting nationalist. He got a cruel set of shades, god of the urban Everglades. He got a cruel set of shades, even when the lighting fades. Bone with soulless piggy eyes, he took to wearing jet black frames. He watched the girls without them seeing. One day he jumped from the balcony. He got a cruel set of shades, god of the urban Everglades. He got a cruel set of shades, even when the lighting fades. All around the nights of Babylon, through crystal crimson lenses, the tiring vista put upon to hell my love with you. He got a cruel set of shades, god of the urban Everglades. He got a cruel set of shades, even when the lighting fades.
Set of Shades from Harry Stafford from his new album Gothic Urban Blues. Harry, thank you very much for the interview. Really enjoyed chatting with you. If you want to hear this program again, you got a lot of choices. You can go to Mixcloud, you can go to lifeelsewhere.co. All the information is there. Till next time, you be good, you be well, and always be nice. It costs absolutely nothing.
You have been listening to Life Elsewhere, created and hosted by Norman B. Life Elsewhere is written and produced by Norman B. Guest booking and additional research by Stephanie Lane. Behind the scenes assistance by James Van, Bruce Goodman, and Allison Klein. We love to hear what you think about Life Elsewhere. Send your questions, queries, and comments to info@lifeelsewhere.co. That's C-O.